I'm Lauren Letellier.
I'm Chris Atkins. We're volunteers at the Rojan Library.
And this is WGXC, Acre, Hudson, and Catskill.
Hi, everyone. It's Lily, the youth peer leader from Mental Health Association of Columbia Green County's Clubhouse. Are you a teen wanting to learn more about health education? Maybe you're looking to complete your volunteer hours or in need of a job. The weekly teen clinic on Wednesdays from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. at Family Planning, located on the third floor of the county building on Main Street in Catskill, can help you answer any of your questions. Information can be found at greengovernment.com. Hope to see you there.
If you like radio that painstakingly stitches together seemingly unlike music in delightfully unpredictable ways, then check out WGXC's Overlooked, the second and fourth Tuesday of each month, just after the new news. You'll hear underheard and overlooked music, ancient to future, from every corner of the Omniverse. That's Overlooked on 90.7 WGXC.
Underwriting is provided in part by Chronogram. Looking to stay informed about the latest in Hudson Valley dining, culture, and happenings? Chronogram's Eat, Play, Stay newsletter delivers curated updates on restaurants, bars, shops, local events, and more straight to your inbox. Covering food, culture, news, and real estate, it's designed to keep you in the loop 5 days a week. Discover what's new and noteworthy in the region by signing up at chronogram.com/newsletter.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of John of Hudson, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to WGXC.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Hello and welcome to the Better Weather for Friday, January 24th. Local early morning temperatures range from 4 degrees in Steventown to 11 in Skodak. Regional average soil temperature is still holding at 33 degrees. As far as the air is concerned, temperatures hit 28 degrees at 3 p.m. Overnight, those temperatures drop to 9 degrees. Tomorrow, we get a high of 27. We'll have a sunny morning and a cloudy afternoon. Overnight, temperatures fall to only 22 degrees. Sunday, we'll have a high of 36 and a lightly snowy afternoon. Monday is looking dry with a high of 36. Sunset today will be at 4:44 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:11 a.m. Looking way up, we see a couple Hadouken are on the way. Aurora watches may be up for the weekend. X-class flare chances are at 10%. Plasma winds will be average at 471 kilometers per second with a thin density of less than 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently good above 10 megahertz with no reported noise floor. There are no chances for aurora this evening, and that's just for tonight, Friday. The current sunspot number is 169, and this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast, January the 24th, 2025. I'm Mike Clifford. A federal judge on Thursday temporarily blocked President Trump's executive order to end automatic citizenship for babies born on American soil, dealing the president his first setback as he attempts to upend the nation's immigration laws and reverse decades of precedent. That from the New York Times. Their report in a hearing held 3 days after Trump issued his executive order, a federal district court judge sided with Washington, Arizona, Illinois, and Oregon, the four states that sued, signing a restraining order that blocks Trump's executive order for 14 days, renewable on expiration. And Indiana lawmakers are advancing a plan to bring nuclear energy to the state.
House Bill 1007 would establish a framework for investing in advanced nuclear technology. GOP Representative Ed Selladay of Valparaiso chairs the House Utilities, Energy, and Telecommunications Committee. He authored the bill after state energy officials warned of power shortage risks without new energy sources.
If we are going to be telling the world we're going to onshore a lot of things that have been taken offshore, We've got to provide for it. We have to provide the infrastructure, and this is happening rapidly.
Critics caution the bill could raise electric bills for residents. Building nuclear reactors is costly, with estimates ranging from $2 to $3 billion per reactor. I'm Joe O'Leary, Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Next, women surveyed about why they stayed in an abusive relationship often say they didn't have the money to leave. Now a bill introduced in the New Mexico legislature aims to help them.
Sponsored by State Representative Pamela Herndon, House Bill 57 would have the court determine whether an abuse survivor is indigent and can't pay for legal help. If so, the court would assign a lawyer to represent them. When she's not at the roundhouse, Herndon runs a nonprofit law center.
I come in contact with far too many individuals who are facing situations where they are trying to get custody of their children. They're trying to make sure there's funds for their children or housing for that matter. So I see it too many times on a regular basis.
Relationship abuse, which is estimated to affect 1 in 3 American women, often includes being stripped of financial resources. Herndon says those without money for an attorney often are forced to represent themselves in court, which she notes is rarely successful if the partner in the abusive relationship can afford professional services. Herndon says her bill is modeled after similar legislation in New York State.
I know New Mexico is not New York, but we have some of the highest rates of domestic violence in the entire country.
Data from Women Against Abuse shows Oklahoma had the highest rates of violence against women in 2024. I'm Roz Brown reporting.
This is Public News Service. Extreme weather has hit Texas over the last few weeks, bringing snow to many parts of the state. During cold weather, landlords are required to ensure renters have adequate heat.
Chapter 27 of the City of Dallas Code establishes minimum property standards at all residential buildings, structures, and premises. Attorney with the nonprofit Dallas Eviction Advocacy Center, Ella Caldeal, says property owners have 24 to 48 hours to correct life-threatening conditions, including heating and cooling problems.
So if they're having heating issues and their landlord is refusing to fix their heater, their only option is to go through and file a repair and remedy case. And in order to file one of those, they do have to be current on rent.
She says tenants can also fix the problems themselves and hope to get reimbursed by their landlord. I'm Frieda Ross reporting.
Next, a new analysis finds more than a dozen global banks, including the World Bank Group and the United Nations Green Climate Fund, invested more than $3 billion into animal agriculture in 2023, with over three-quarters of the funded projects described as factory farms.
Investments are also taking place in Kentucky, which has over 74,000 factory farms. Alessandro Ramazzotti with the International Accountability Project says putting this much money into factory farming will have disastrous consequences for people and the planet.
These investments often generate negative consequences for local communities and for animal welfare, hurting at many levels, locally, globally, and for environment, the climate, people, and animals.
The World Bank Group, the largest development investor by volume in factory farming, says it's aligned with the Paris Climate Agreement goal of keeping warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius. This story was produced with original reporting from Sophie Cavani for Sentient. Nadia Ramlagan reporting.
And finally, more than 3 million folks in New York have a diagnosed mental illness, but only about 1 in 3 can get the care that they need.
The barriers stem from many factors like so-called fail-first policies, which require people to try and insure a preferred medication first before covering the original prescription. Matthew Shapiro with the National Alliance on Mental Illness New York State chapter says another issue is what are known as ghost networks.
In some cases, up to 75% of providers that the insurance company gives to their clients don't actually exist. They're no longer practicing in the area. We call that ghost coverage, where they're telling you coverage is there and it's not.
Crack down on insurers to maintain consistent and accessible levels of care for all. Another barrier is low mental health care reimbursement rates for providers. I'm Edwin J. Vieira.
This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported. Here are some radio stations, big and small, your favorite podcast platform. Find our content and trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hello. You You are listening to the WGXC Afternoon Show right in the Catskill Studio. WGXC 90.7 Radio for Open Ears. And I'm Simone Stevens. I'll be your host today. And I am joined by my lovely friend who I've known for a very, very long time, Danielle Epstein. And this is my audition show. It's the first time I've ever been on radio live. And so I thought, what better way to do that to invite a very special guest that I have admired for so long and who is so important in many people's lives for many different reasons. And I'm just staring into her big, beautiful blue eyes right now. Can you say hello?
Right back at you, Simone Stevens.
Thank you so much.
Hello, everybody. It's really good to be here.
Yes, we are very excited to be here. And Danny has had a very unique trajectory in her life. We met very long ago. We're going to date ourselves. I don't mind. Do you mind dating yourself?
No, okay. I embrace it. Yes.
Yeah, I embrace it as well. So we met in, what, 2000?
2000, 2001, so yeah, 2000 yeah. maybe. Yeah.
2000 in New York City, waiting tables, slinging hash,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Serving drinks,
mm-hmm.
And it was for an Ian Schrager property, right? The Studio
yes.
54 fella.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely wild. Do you remember those days?
I do remember those days. They were, I think you were at the front end of the madness and I joined everybody a little bit later. So,
yeah.
But it was a fun, fun time.
Yes, it was a fun, crazy time. And we were just kids, sort of launched into this New York nightlife.
And it was kind of wonderful because we had all moved to the city to pursue these different careers in the arts and we became each other's family to some degree. And I always felt like that place was my grad school.
So true.
A little bit, you
so
know.
So true.
Because I think so many times people move to the city and it's hard to connect and find your crew. And it was a built-in crew for all of us.
It
and I feel
was.
Very...
And we're still friends today with
yeah.
a lot of the people that
yeah.
we met back then.
Mm-hmm.
And New York, the New York City is such a hub. It does draw people from all over the place. You were coming from Florida. I was coming from California. And we have met friends from North Carolina, all creative minds and beings coming into mm-hmm. New York City to pursue their particular creative avenues.
Mm-hmm.
And yours was specifically acting.
And right? singing, yeah.
And singing.
Singing and acting, yeah.
Yeah, musical theater.
Yes.
Now, are you a triple threat?
No, I can't dance. I am a terrible, terrible dancer, and I remain so. Even after, like, 4 years of, like, ballet and tap and jazz, I'm still really unskilled.
I've seen you move and groove. I don't buy it. I don't buy it, sister.
Interpretive dance, I really shine in interpretive dance.
Interpretive dance where there's no rules or boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
I respect that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but at what point you started transitioning and focusing more on cabaret?
I did.
Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Well, what happened was I was pretty unsuccessful.
I love the honesty. Well, I just did not book any work.
I think it was hard for people to know where to put me because I was a short, sort of like moderately chubby soprano. And, you know, when do you see that? And I couldn't really belt to do the character roles and I couldn't dance to do the character roles. So,
but you had the passion. You had so much passion.
I did. So I, at some point after like trying and trying and trying and trying, I just really like sort of hit rock bottom and felt really bad about it. And I couldn't even bring myself to sing because it was just so painful.
Aww.
And I, you know, I'd gone to a pretty good school. I went to Florida State and all my friends were moving into the city and booking jobs right away. And I was not, not that I wasn't doing anything, but
yeah.
you know, in my own like young 20-year-old eyes, I was a failure.
Aww.
But
that led to?
Well, what happened was I sort of had to like reinvestigate my voice and kind of find it again because I was singing a lot of music theater and I think I took like maybe a year off or it was, and I remember trying to go back and sing and just crying.
Aww.
Because it was so it's just so painful because it was my dream and I was really attached to it. And my identity was really wrapped up in being a singer and being talented and all of that stuff. So I had to kind of reinvestigate my voice. And I used to go to the practice rooms in New York City. I don't know if you remember, there was like Ripley Greer and Shetler Studios.
Oh,
and
I remember those. I've done a little time in those rooms.
Yes. So I would go and I would book an hour and I would just let myself sing and see what came out. And what was coming out was sort of like a more sort of like jazzier sound that I didn't know I had in me. And I eventually started, I remember there was like a 1930s idol competition and I had been singing all this like early jazz, like Ethel Waters and, you know, stuff from like the movie musicals. And so the application time was closed, but I just emailed them and I was like, I know I missed the deadline, but here's like a audio file. I'd like to do it. And they let me do it and I won it. And I would go to like Birdland and do open mics and I don't know. That's just what my voice wanted to do. And then
But you found a community, right? That was so, I mean, it's amazing how there's all kinds of communities in New York, upstate, in the city of artists, but then you get sort of into niche, right? Your niche groups. And so, like, it's an umbrella, right? And underneath that umbrella, there's cabaret, comedy, right? You have these other sort of smaller, more intimate communities. And did you find?
I did. I still think that the cabaret community in New York City is one of the most accepting, extraordinary, creative, colorful, diverse communities and I've ever experienced. And they really made me feel so welcome. And they used to have these like open mics at the Algonquin Hotel, the Oak Room at the Algonquin Hotel, and then at another place.
What a great room.
Beautiful. Yeah, exactly. So much, and so much history.
Yeah.
So much history in that community and like, you know, New York in the 80s and those cabaret rooms, like in the Village.
You played some of those, like the Duplex, right? The Duplex. I remember going to the Duplex and Don't Tell Mamas.
Yeah, it's still there.
That's still there. Pangea's not.
No, Pangea's still there.
It's still there.
The Metropolitan Room is not there anymore.
Right, and I've seen you sing there. And because you built two solo. Is it fair to call it a solo cabaret show?
Yeah, I guess that's what they're
it is,
called,
right?
Yeah.
So, You built two solo cabaret shows. The first one was called Old, New, Borrowed, and Blues. And then the second one was The Girl with a Long Last Name, because Epstein is your married name, right? So what's your, give us that last long.
It's Grabianowski is my maiden name.
Grabby, and didn't I used to call you Grab Me a Brewski?
Yeah, everybody has like a everybody has a creative spin on it, which I love.
Well, I love both your married and your real last name, I guess, or what's the word for it? Not your real last name.
My maiden. Yeah. When I was a maiden.
When you were a maiden. And just to anybody who's just popped in to listen now, I'm Simone Stevens, local community member, sitting down for a chat with Danielle Epstein / Grabianowski / Grab Me a Brewski, cabaret singer and mental health professional. And we were just talking about a couple of shows that she would perform in her cabaret career. So at a certain point, and I remember this, you decided to go back to school, right? And you were doing well. You were booking shows in cabaret, and you were winning awards. Something happened, and you made this big shift, this seismic shift. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think that as much as I loved doing cabaret, in terms of making a living, it wasn't really sustainable. And also, I don't think I realized this at the time, but looking back, I don't I didn't have like the personality and the confidence. I had the artistic drive to create, but I didn't have the, I don't think it was really confidence, but I think when you're in a position like that, you kind of like need someone to sell you. And mm-hmm. I don't know. I didn't have that part of the drive, and I didn't have that skill set necessarily.
I mean, that resonates with me, because I feel like as a creative, I'm very in tune with the process part.
And yeah.
You know, I can sit down, I can write a song, I can paint, you know, draw a picture. The whole creative part, I can make a record, dive in, you know, come up with parts from the beginning of writing a song to having a complete album. But man, trying to get that album on the shelves to sell.
Yeah.
I come up against such a wall when it comes to selling.
Well, it's like it's your baby. It's like you wouldn't say to a mom, go sell your baby. Mm-hmm. You know, that would be weird, but that is really kind of what it feels like.
Yeah.
You know, you put so much of yourself into a thing, and then, you know, to subject it to people saying, no, we don't want that is really, I think that's why people who champion the arts are so important.
Right. They're kind of the glue or the missing piece.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it does feel so intense where from process to, let's call it pitching, you know, it feels like you're just in this gentle womb-like zone, and then suddenly you're in the middle of like the Squid Game or something.
Yeah. 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 It's a completely different skill set. It's a completely different skill set. And actually, what helped me a lot when I was doing cabaret was that I did an internship at a PR firm in the city, and then I ended up working for them. So I got a lot of experience writing press releases about shows, and they were all cabaret, pop, and jazz artists. So I developed a skill set for how to at least put things into words, and who to send them to, and who to send the emails to, and how to make press kits and things like that. So to some degree, I could be on autopilot about it.
Structure. Gave yourself some structure.
Yeah,
That's exactly. What we need, is structure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're really good at that, though, now. You know, I watched you over time be really disciplined
you're very
about
kind.
It.
I think I'm still very attached to the process part.
And
I still like, it's like getting into a warm bath for me, you know? Uh-huh, uh-huh. And then pitching it is the moment you have to get out and face the cold air on your skin, you
know? That's a great analogy.
That's an emotional aspect, right?
Right.
But then you mentioned sort of practical reasons
for
making a
shift. Yeah, so I loved doing cabaret, but I don't think that I was ever really going to make a living. I think there must be like 10 people on the planet that are able to make a living doing cabaret. And I kind of wanted to do what I wanted to do, and I didn't really want to do what I didn't want to do at that point.
There you go.
And I knew that that was probably not so viable. So I actually investigated a couple of things before I decided to go back to school for social work.
Uh-huh.
But I had, in high school, I had, my plan was, in high school, was to go to school for psychology. That was what I was going to do, and then kind of switched last minute.
From psychology to theater.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I had a drama teacher who was like, I think if you wanted to do this, you could do this. And I was like, okay, that's the green light. I'll do it.
Wow.
So
wouldn't it be funny if years later you were her therapist? Just kidding. Okay.
And the other thing about all of the acting and singing stuff was I was doing all of this, all the things you do when you're an actor to be a better actor, you know, like movement classes, and I started going to therapy because my acting teacher was like, you need to go to therapy. And I kind of like trusted her and did whatever she told me to do. And I got really interested in all of those sort of extracurricular things that I was doing to support my performing arts career. And And I'd always been interested in, the psychological side of things. So,
well, yeah, I mean, actors, I think that's a big part of it because they kind of get to crawl inside somebody else's
mind. What is it like to be
heart.
Another person, or what is it like to be you?
And then within investigating that character, you kind of stumble upon things in yourself, maybe.
Exactly.
I'm guessing. Yeah. I didn't get too deep into the thespian world.
I think you did.
I had a brief
a little stint.
But you did decide to go to choose NYU.
Yeah. Right? So I went to NYU. I got my degree in social work. And then got a job on a mobile crisis. Yeah, on a mobile crisis unit. So I went into people's homes and did mental health evaluations. That was like part of a city program where you could call if you were concerned about a person. And we had like three of us and we'd go do evaluations and kind of assess if they were a danger to themselves or others and needed to have some extra supportive care.
Wow.
Or if they just needed extra supports outside of the home, and then we'd connect them. excuse me.
And please correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I remember before you even decided to focus on mental health and go back to school for social work, did you used to volunteer for a suicide hotline?
Oh, I did.
You did, right?
I volunteered for the Samaritans Suicide Hotline.
Yeah.
And they're still in existence, and I maintain that I think it was the best training.
Really?
Of all the trainings that I've done.
Even better than NYU?
Well, just, it was so, no, I mean, NYU is wonderful, but it was so practice-based, and they would sort of, like, drill these open-ended question muscles into your brain, and, I mean, they're like a part of me now, you know. So, and it was pretty intensive, the training.
And you did that just... What compelled you to do that? When people volunteer and then they volunteer for specific things, what compelled you to volunteer in the first place and to choose that? Do you think it just falls in line with your interest in the human experience? Or
I guess I was at a place where I was sort of in a transition and was a little like I didn't know exactly where I was. Mm-hmm. And it was helpful to think about contributing in some way. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I guess I've always been drawn to the edges of things, or extremes in some way.
Wow.
So, or polarities of things. And so I don't know. I think I just felt like, I don't know. I just had a feeling like that's where I wanted to put my contribution.
Well, I tell you, not a lot of 22-year-olds were running around New York City doing that.
No.
So do you think there's, once you went back to NYU and you started practicing, did you find a link between cabaret and social work? I know that's kind of a very loose, nebulous question, but were they completely different needs you were fulfilling? Or did you find there's actually a similar need that I'm fulfilling?
Well, I think the thread, I don't know specifically about social work in general, because social work is such a broad field, but mm-hmm. I think for me, the thread was about creating a space for other people to have some kind of experience. And when you're in a cabaret room, you're the performer and you're putting stuff out there and it's like the Shakespeare, you hold the mirror up to nature. And so you're putting your stuff out there and the audience sees pieces of themselves in it and they reflect, or hopefully they feel something.
Yeah.
And then as a therapist, I think you're still creating and holding, you're in both scenarios, you're co-creating a space with a person or groups of people, and the purpose is to create some kind of a connection and experience of mutual humanity.
Yeah.
So for me, that is the thread. And I think that actually for me, it's almost like a more conducive way to connecting than even, you know, in regular human relationships sometimes, because that's exactly what they're for. So you're just kind of free in that way.
Wow. Well, on that note, I would love to, before we delve a little deeper into mental health, you know, your main focus this day, these days, we're going to have a little musical break. And if you're just tuning in, I'm Simone, community member, chatting with Danielle Epstein, also local Catskill cabaret singer, mental health professional. And you, I believe you have a little treat for us today. This is our musical break, and we get a live a cappella version of La Vie en Rose. So I'm all ears, girl.
Quand il me prend dans ses bras, il me parle tout bas, je vois la vie en rose. Il me dit des mots d'amour, des mots de tous les jours, et ça me fait quelque chose. Il est entré dans mon cœur une part du bonheur dont je connais la cause. C'est lui pour moi, moi pour lui dans la vie. Il me l'a dit, la jurée pour la vie. Dès que je l'aperçois, alors je sens à moi mon cœur qui bat.
Oh, my goodness. I just love hearing you sing that. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for asking me to sing it.
Oh, my gosh. I feel like I'm just all of a sudden... I'm in this, like, smoky little den in Paris with candlelight, and someone's smoking right in my face, and I don't even care.
I miss the days when people smoked in stores a little bit. I mean, it's better that they don't, but...
I miss maybe when somebody lights it for 2 seconds, forgets, and then goes outside.
Yeah, whiff. Yes.
Yeah, just, quick whiff.
Just the sense memory of it, you know? Yeah, it's nostalgic. Yeah.
Oh, that was beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I remember being so impressed as you went into this whole new direction in mental health. And I remember you first started working at a hospital in Queens, right? Mm-hmm. Focusing mainly on children. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'd gotten like the per diem job on the mobile crisis unit, and then something opened up in the child and adolescent mental health clinic. Mm-hmm. So we saw children from ages 5 to 21, I think. Mm-hmm. And we would do evaluate, you know, kids would get referred from school a lot or from various places, and we'd do evaluations on certain days, and then we just would do therapy with kids. Mm. That was what we did.
Mm-hmm. And I bet that was pretty, you could have intense days.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. And it was, I was so green. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was so complex. Mm-hmm. A lot of the case, I mean, every person is complex, but
these are kids, you know, they're children.
I know. And kids, working with children is like, you're really working with the whole family. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have access and collaboration with families, and sometimes it's more difficult. And then the language barrier, so many kids, so many kids had parents whose first language was not English, so we had translators. Mm-hmm. And I just amazing.
How would you, when I think about it, I think, oh gosh, I would be going home at the end of the day, and I would be, you know, probably pacing back and forth, going, oh gosh, what happened, you know, to Timmy, what happened?
Yeah.
Like, it would be so hard for me to shut my brain off at the end of the day. How do you hear hard things in a session with children and then still create your own space when you go home? There's got to be a...
That's a really good question. I mean, I guess at the time my life was so busy and I had a kid. Mm-hmm. So that made it a little bit easier because I was going to work. I was dropping him off at school, and then he was only like three. I was dropping him off at school and going to work and then coming back and picking him up. Mm-hmm. And then there was like all that whole world. So I didn't even...
You didn't have tons of time to go home and think about it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
You had your own child to come home to and take care of.
Yeah.
Even that
is sort of like, you know, when you're in that world where you're trying to figure other children out, and then you start to, you know, try to figure your own kid out, and then you're like, no, I'm his mom, not his therapist, you know. Right. You're taking right. off the hats was hot. Something, yeah.
Yeah, right? So. Taking off the therapist, the child therapist hat be mama to your own little one.
Yeah.
Wow.
But that hospital is very special, that community. Mm-hmm. You know, for people who don't know, it's the most, like, one of the most diverse, like, square miles in the country. And being able to be a part of the lives of those people made me feel, you know, it was an honor. I mean, it sounds cheesy, but it was like an honor to be able to be in their lives in that way and witness their stories.
Wow, you're a receiver of stories, right? On the daily.
Yeah.
On the daily, real stories.
Yeah.
You know, I think about how many stories I consume in different formats.
Right.
You know, online, you know, on my phone.
Yeah.
But, like, you're in the flesh, real life, unfiltered. Uh-huh. Probably as unfiltered as it gets, right? And I am going to ask a couple questions about that. But now you primarily focus on adults, right? You mostly work with adults in therapy setting.
Mostly, yeah. I'm moving back into working with kids a little bit in different ways. But, yeah, during COVID, because I had my own child and it was difficult to work with children over telehealth.
Oh,
so between both of those things, I kind of... transition to working with adults.
Wow. And I know you moved up here from the city, so you are a Catskill resident. Proud and excited to be so. We talk about it a lot, how much we love it up here. Uh-huh. And finding community and building community where you're at in Margaretville, right?
Yeah.
And we've been talking lately about the sort of traditional life path, right?
Oh, right, yeah.
Versus a non-traditional life path, right? And because I always think, well, there's two layers to that, right? One layer is what society's ideas of traditional life path is, and then there's the life path you learn in the home.
Right.
Right? I know for me, a traditional life path, if I'm thinking on a societal level, it's, right, all the little boxes that we check. You know, right,
like the Pete Seeger song. Is that Pete Seeger?
Yeah. Little boxes, right? And then my own childhood in my home, you know, that was a different life path. That was very much grounded in the arts and not and be creative. I mean, it was not. It didn't resemble the traditional life path that I was hearing about in other, you know, places, right, in my life. And we were talking about you working with clients and sort of hearing a lot about this lately, how people are navigating the traditional life path versus who they are and, and their life path and what's going on with them. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, it comes up in a framework of neurodiversity a lot. Mm-hmm. People who have... identified later as neurodiverse, ADHD, you know, somewhere on the spectrum, and sort of talking about what their strengths are and what their natural ways of being in the world are, which sometimes they have to rediscover and uncover because they've had to sort of fit in these molds. Mm-hmm. And they forget what their natural ways of being or what their natural preferences are. Mm-hmm. So inviting people to just reacquaint themselves with themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, things like, you know, job-wise, you know, a 9-to-5 job doesn't really, like, work for everybody necessarily. And being able to advocate for yourself at work,
mm-hmm.
or having a different style of working, like freelancing versus, you know, a contract.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what you need for your hours and where you need to be doing your work and how your rhythms are. Some people, you know, I mean, I was talking to someone who was just sort of raised very traditionally.
And what's that? Let's talk a little bit about that. What does that mean traditionally? Let's like spell
right.
it out.
Like, so for example, we'll say like in Connecticut, two siblings, lawyer, doctor, mom's a housewife, dad's a, and they're like, that's wonderful if that fits for you. But this person, you know, we, or any of us can get really burnt out trying to fit into a mold especially as you reach like your late 30s and into your 40s,
mm-hmm.
all the extra catch-up work you have to do
mm-hmm.
to be able to like fit in the mold
mm-hmm.
starts to really take its toll.
Hmm.
So,
and is this a pattern you're seeing? I'm kind of like, what's that? I have this, what's the patterns of mental health 2025? Give me some hot tips, girl. No, but are you seeing other patterns of like, you know, that's such an interesting thing that you say people are catching up because there's so much, the traditional life path and having a job and having that job forever.
Yeah.
That's changed, yeah. right? And so, somebody can do everything that they think they should do as far as having a traditional life path uh-huh. by getting that career solidified by the time they're 30
right.
so they can have kids and time to, right?
right?
So they do everything that they should do, but then, you know, life happens,
uh-huh.
economy happens,
uh-huh.
Technology happens, and all of a sudden they're kind of knocked off the path,
yeah,
almost involuntarily. Are you seeing right. that happen with just the way industries change and shift?
Absolutely. A lot of people are, well, I mean, some people are shifting to freelance work because the trends are, I don't even know what's happening, but like people are hiring more freelancers because mm-hmm. I don't know if the
gig economy.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. what, you know, so people are forming their own businesses. And, you know, I was doing I was doing a training and it was a bunch of therapists. So we, you know, when everyone introduces themselves, it was the first time I heard across the board people introducing themselves as part of their identity as childless by choice.
Wow.
Right. And I think that was one of the biggest examples of, you know, non-traditional path.
Wow.
And they're choosing that path and, you know, despite.
And talk about a traditional versus non-traditional path, right? Uh-huh. Having to have a child or to not have a child,
yeah.
right? That so many people are facing it for different reasons, some for economics, finances, some can't find the partner and don't want to do it alone or don't feel like they can do it alone.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a, sometimes it does feel like it gets oversimplified and it's, there's this attitude of childlessness that it's selfish or, you know, you're not contributing to the continuation of the human race. And, there's so many people and women I know that even though they're childless, it wasn't by choice. It was by circumstance.
Right.
And everybody's story is different.
Exactly. Right. right. Sometimes you're on the non-traditional path by choice and sometimes, you know, the traditions don't happen in by happenstance.
Yeah. So, and you're seeing people kind of grapple with that and struggle with how to adjust to either involuntarily not being on that path.
Right. Yes.
Or voluntarily.
Yes. Yes. And right, being able to know that they have a choice.
Yeah.
Right. That's actually, I think, one of the trickiest
things. Is struggling with accepting they have a choice.
Yeah. Well, identifying what they want for their lives versus just accepting that this is what they should want. This is what I should want.
Wow.
You know.
Wow.
Because you don't think about, the fact that it's a choice. It's an expectation, and you don't think about it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, on that note, what do you think about one more musical interlude?
Oh.
Would you?
Sure.
Ooh, all right. For those of us just joining, we're talking about traditional path, non-traditional path with cabaret singer and mental health professional Danielle Epstein, and she's going to sing us another little song.
When you walk through a storm, keep your chin up high and don't be afraid of the dark. At the end of the storm is a golden sky and the sweet silver song of a lark. Walk on through the wind, walk on through the rain, though your dreams be tossed and blown. Walk on, walk on, with hope in your heart, and you'll
What a great song choice. What made you pick that song?
I don't know what you were thinking about. We were talking about paths, and I was thinking about, some of the choices I've made that, sometimes when you're walking on a path, it can be lonely, especially when it's non-traditional.
Yeah, yeah. And it's what's interesting is I find that there are... The interesting thing is I have a friend who... never had children, and where she lives, she moved. She was living in New York City, and she moved back to Idaho. And everyone she grew up with has kids, and she doesn't have kids, and she really, really struggles with it, because when they all get together, they all talk about their kids, and they all talk about, and she feels left out, and. And I feel like I have a lot of friends who don't have children, but maybe that's geographically, like where I am, and having friends in bigger cities that tend to put off having kids for longer, or but where she is geographically and in that circle, but I've told her, I said there are many people that are not living a traditional path.
Right,
you are not alone.
Right.
But it's hard to remember that, and it's hard to think that when you're in your immediate surroundings.
Yeah. Right, and it's so important to find your people.
Mm-hmm.
In anything, whether it's like with children or with neurodiversity or with your spirituality or whatever it is, because. It's like the song says, nobody really is alone in anything, or if you're like a divorced parent.
Yeah.
And it's just, there's so much in realizing that you're not alone.
Yeah.
Because you can just go to these crazy places in your head.
Oh, yeah.
And they're not even really necessarily real. Yeah. But left to your own devices, right? If the only reality you surround yourself with is that everybody has a kid and that's the reality that they know too and they're reinforcing it.
Yeah.
You know, that's, it's a disconnect. It's like a, you know, it doesn't, your reality doesn't get reflected back to you, and like, it's kind of crazy making.
Yeah. And do you find that, like, in working with, you know, when you're listening to your clients and talking about things like this, are people actively, and do you have this discussion with your clients about finding community, finding somebody who shares their, whether it is traditional path, or because people, I think, struggle with the traditional path too.
Right. Yeah.
So do you think people are getting used to isolating, or and it, that it's a struggle to, I mean, do you come across that in your clients trying to navigate to be or not to be alone?
Right. Yeah. I think isolation is one of the difficulty in connection, really, because in some ways people are not isolated, but in some ways, you know, we are since the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not only that, it's like when they do connect, there's like a difficulty there that was, I don't know, that maybe wasn't there before.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I think it's to some degree like connect, being able to connect to yourself,
yeah,
so that you could connect to another person.
Do you think people have kind of also maybe gotten cozy in their solitude? I mean, I'm like, ooh, I'm isolating and I like it.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm just like, yes, this is cozy and I've got tea and I don't need to talk to anybody.
Yes. I mean, that is one of the hallmarks of being an adult, is to enjoy your solitude, I think, right?
So it's not, I'm okay. You're not in danger.
Yes. Okay. Yes. I always think that, like, I could spend an inordinate amount of time by myself and keep myself if I needed to. But maybe that's wrong. Maybe I'd go bonkers. I don't know.
I don't know. I think sometimes I'm like, oh, I'm just enjoying this lovely afternoon on my own with this drive, and I'll go for a hike, and then I'll have some ice cream. And then all of a sudden it kind of hits me, a little loneliness. You know, it's kind of unexpected.
Yeah.
Little, like, breeze that hits me from out of nowhere. You know, there is a balance between enjoying solitude, I think, and isolating.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things I have discovered since I moved to the Catskills is that most of us underestimate the power of a relationship with a plant or a tree or a forest or the land. And I think for myself and for other people, I've been in places where, like, people become, for whatever reason, difficult to connect to. And it's always a possibility to connect with the land or nature, because it is a relationship with a living thing, you know? And there's a lot of people around here and in the Western Catskills who are really cultivating those relationships.
And are you finding that and working with your clients? Are you hearing that people are finding solace and peace more now than ever in nature, especially up here when you're working with clients?
Well, so I haven't worked with so many people up here because a lot of the people that I work with are in the city.
Wow.
So when I bring it up, it's different, but there are trees in the city, you know? You know, all it takes is a tree. It could be a houseplant, you know. It's a living thing.
Yeah.
So I know, I think they're like a little bit resistant, but when you're up here, it kind of like calls to you a little bit, I think.
Oh my gosh. I depend on my walks. It is like having a relationship.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you read, who's that poet? Oh gosh, her name is Mary. Oh no, it'll come to me. That's funny. Oh, that's funny. She writes about, you know, her relationship with nature all the time. Anyway, it'll come to me.
I also have to commend you because I know you're getting over a cold. And here you are, sounding beautiful, singing for us. I'm just so impressed and grateful.
Well, I think there's something about a stuffy nose that makes your voice more clear, maybe. I don't know.
It sounds like your voice. It sounds like it. So in what ways... We're almost signing off here. We've only got a few more minutes. In what way have you, because I feel like you've done both. You've gone sort of off the traditional path, and then you've also taken the traditional path. You've kind of done it all, which I'm just so impressed with. What's your favorite part about veering off? How did you veer off the traditional path, and what was what do you celebrate from that?
I don't think I did it on any of it on purpose. You know, I think I don't know. I guess the older I get, the more I realize I have a choice to carve my own path, whether it's traditional or non-traditional.
Yeah,
and so. I like the idea of remembering that I have a choice.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I guess when you get into your 40s, too, you kind of, it doesn't matter as much. You know, you're kind of free to do that. And I...
don't sweat the small stuff as much.
Yeah. And there's just less, like... You know, people are paying less attention to you.
That's the beauty of it. You're like, wow, nobody looked at me at all today.
Nobody cares. No. But, you know, there's, I don't want to say there's a cloak of invisibility, but anyway,
hey, if there's a cloak of invisibility, why not dance around in it? You know what I mean?
Exactly, exactly. But yeah, that's another radio show,
right? So, what are some? I was joking about earlier, but what are some hot tips for mental health going into 2025? What can we do to stay? Everybody is saying this. It's such turbulent times, and. For whatever reason, it doesn't matter what you subscribe to,
yeah,
right?
It
doesn't really matter what you subscribe to politically. These are wild waters. So what can we? Can you leave us with some just hot tips, hot mental health?
Well, I guess what's come.
Or you can't say there's nothing you can do.
That's
so.
Not your, you know. Just stay in bed. No, what's come up lately is two things. One is finding a balance between protecting yourself from the cacophony and chaos of the world so that you are able to connect with and be with yourself and function as a human being, and balance that with being an informed citizen of this country and of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that balance looks different for everybody.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of talk about just like, you know, I want to ignore things, but I feel guilty about it. And, you know, it doesn't feel good to ignore for so long.
Yeah.
So however you need to be informed, you can be informed in a way that feels right for you. Yeah. So, and that's it. That's the one thing that's come up this week. But it will take some time. It will take time. It will take weeks.
Yeah. Well, thank you for joining me. And I hope any plans to have the girl with the really long name play somewhere in Catskill?
You can stay tuned to the Margaretville Arts Center.
Okay.
And see what might pop up there.
Yay! I will definitely keep my ears and eyes open. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
This is Simone and Danny on WGXC 90.7 radio for open ears. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in. And we wish you the best on this beautiful Friday night. Stay warm. Stay cool. And peace out. Any last thoughts, Danny?
Drive safe.
Yes, always. Please don't honk. Please don't honk or cut anyone off. Go slow. 20 miles per hour in most places. All right. Take care, everybody.